What's up, everybody?
Wait, no, I have to do the intro first, and then you can do it. I know, I love it. Hello, you are listening to The Dungeon Boys, a group of seven friends telling a story, Dungeons and Dragons style. You can find us pretty much anywhere that you go on the social medias. And with that, we'll go ahead and introduce the boys and let them do their prompt. Your prompt today, boys, is what is your character's least favorite household chore? Oh, and we say fuck, so this is mature.
Wieners.
What's up, everybody? It's me, Lindsay, your Tabaxi Rogue, playing in Stardust Echoes. And, Six doesn't do household chores.
That tracks.
Any of them.
Does Six even have a house to do household chores?
No.
A house to hold?
She does not have a house to hold. She just has a ship and probably like a little cleaning robot.
Oh, yeah.
Super Roomba.
Super Roomba.
Decent band name.
What is going on, you stone giants and sluts? It is your boy, Grant, and I play your golden dragonborn barbarian, Kothar Tarash.
Hell yeah.
His least favorite chore to do is cleaning the toilets, because his dad would make him clean the military toilets when he was in the army. So you can probably guess how stinky and raunchy those toilets are.
Yeah. Damn.
With his own toothbrush, and then make him brush his teeth with it.
Yeah, like Forrest Gump kind of
you
thing.
You made it real worse.
Sorry.
No, it's good.
Hey, y'all. My name is Arland. I play Valen, your winged tiefling Sarlacc, here in the house. And Valen's least favorite chore, I think it's just dusting. He hates dusting.
That's rough for an archaeologist.
Because once you've dusted, you're done, and then there's more dust. It's always more dust.
Archaeologist problems.
Hi, I'm Anthony. I play Grayson Cato, your half-elf ranger. Grayson's least favorite chore is nothing, because Grayson has never done chores in his life because he is rich and his family hires people to do that kind of menial tasks for them.
Half-elf privilege.
That's the answer I was expecting. He just somehow dodged all chores. Has no concept of them.
No concept of chores.
What is chore?
Hi, guys. My name's Ellie. I play Pants, the Artificer Kobold, on Stardust Echoes. Pants's least favorite household chore is probably the laundry, because if you can imagine doing a bunch of dwarves' laundry on your laundry day turn.
Stinky.
Of the house, it's probably pretty unbearable. So that's his least favorite chore.
He's a little stinky boy. He doesn't even do his own laundry.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. Well, he doesn't really have pants, so he just, you know, wrings out his little shirt and his little vest, and that's about it.
Well, I thought Pants has pants. That was the whole thing.
Yeah, the way this canonically goes back and forth of Pants having pants is pretty good.
I'm pretty sure maybe there has been times where I'm like, he pulls up his little pants and gets to work, but he doesn't.
He's just poo bearing.
He's just poo bearing.
For the lore, he's constantly poo bearing.
Love it. Wake us up, baby.
Poo bearing for the lore.
Does he have a penis? Probably. We will never know, though.
That's for the lore to know.
The lore and the lord.
Hey everyone, I'm Dylan, and I play Temple, the Warforged Monk on Stardust Echoes. And Temple finds all chores to be very edifying, and he will gladly do everyone's chores for them.
What a fucking guy.
Which is the reason why that no one's noticed that Grayson hasn't done any chores, is because Temple notices that it hasn't been done yet, so he
Temple
just does
just
it.
Does them. He's just happy. He's just here to serve.
And he's not even doing it like, oh yeah, Grayson is like lax on his duties. Like, no, he has no concept of them.
And my name is Justine, and I am your Dungeon Master and host for this game. We normally let you know that we are a mature rated podcast. For this one specifically, we're going to ask that you do check the content warnings that are always in the episode description, as there are some heavier pieces of content in this episode. So that is why we're giving a more intense description than usual. And always, always try to stay to the very end of the episode. Even after the credits, where we do a little promotion of ourselves, we always have bloopers, important updates about the show,
or we could promote other folks in the TTRPG realm that we recommend to you, but mostly bloopers. And with that, the Dungeon Boys proudly present Stardust Echoes. Last episode, the team finally started on their way to the Vaultsum Nautical. Something built up throughout this entire campaign and through their entire adventure, from the beginning when they were sent to Tarrant 19 till now, this bonded group of individuals finally ready to compete in the race of a lifetime, about to land on the planet Notuv with Torash's father waiting to greet them. The ship starts to lower. You're starting to see the vibrant color of the blue of the oceans against the hot, rich, deep reds of these magma fields and lava canyons and towering volcanoes. And as you get lower and lower, you see a small settlement with sandstone-like buildings that seem almost rudimentary in this wild technological-filled star system. And about a half mile out is a huge erected dome right on the edge of one of the lava fields. This big aluminum dome can only be what you assume as where the Vaultsum Nautical is going to take place. You kind of look to your right and left, and ships are whizzing past you, up and down, landing all around. There's press. There's people coming to join. There's families. The excitement is like a palpable taste on your palate. And as you kind of squint, and Storash lowers the ship lower and lower, you see an older golden dragonborn kind of waving at you with his left arm, looking almost ecstatic. The horns curl inward like Maleficent, just like Torash's do. And Torash seems almost giddy as he perfectly sets the ship down. Again, droids are kind of buzzing around, but this golden dragonborn is all Torash can focus on as he hits one of the buttons and the ship's door depressurizes and then opens. And you're instantly hit with humidity. Hot, wet heat floods into the ship, and there's just a smell of sulfur and burning with the mix of seawater. And you all look out and see Torash's father approaching.
We exit the ship.
Okay, yeah, so Temple, you walk out and see a dragonborn about 40 feet out walking towards you.
I wave. And then I look up at Torash, like, come on, buddy.
Come on, little buddy.
And then Torash, you kind of pick your head out and look, and you see your father approaching. What does Temple see on your face?
He sees, an excitement that you haven't really seen in Torash, because he's that big, physically the big guy of the group. But you can certainly tell that his features has definitely softened a lot, and especially now being in the presence of his own home, he's finally comfortable in his, seeing his father, his family, knowing that he's finally back home. He just feels like he can at least take a little bit of a load off, and just kind of take a deep breath and relax a little.
So you all walk out, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
Yep.
Azeron getting the opportunity to, get off the ship because he's big now and, stretch, just, runs down the ramp, stretches his wings, and just takes off into the sky. And is just, circling above and just flying, being a guy.
Tosh's father's jaw drops as a blue dragon
just runs out of your ship.
Sir Charles on my shoulder, and he like squeaks, and then like nudges my neck, and I look at him, and I'm like, go ahead. And he like transforms into a little baby Ezreon, and he starts flying around with them.
Hell yeah.
Six wants to step out, light up a cigarette, and then she wants to look at Grayson and go, thought I came from a shithole.
Grayson just kind of half smiles to himself and says, hey, be nice. This is their culture.
Fair enough.
Pants comes out and like realizes how icky and muggy and hot it is, and he like takes Torash's arm and he like pushes it up in the air and stands under his like massive biceps of shade.
Ooh. Inferna looks at you, Six, and looks outside almost for permission,
and I just give her like a head nod, like, go ahead, girl. Go on, girl. And then I throw a ball for her.
Aww.
It's like a chunk of fucking ember or something.
A little bit of lava rock.
Yeah, she runs out in her magma-y, ashy hellhound self. This is totally a good place for her. She starts rolling around in the volcanic soil and barking. And when she barks, little fires start under paws from excitement. Mm-mm. And she just starts kind of chasing the ball in her tail and is very happy. And now we've got all your fucking pets out of the way.
I was just going to say, like, yeah, we land and then just a petting zoo spills out of this ship. Like,
Torash, your father's about 20 feet out.
He kind of, like, excitedly walks forward. And when he's about, you know, when he's just within arm's reach of him, he, like, stops and he strikes his arm, like, on his chest, with his arm kind of, like, across his chest, and he bows a little bit, and in Draconic, he says, may Bahamut's light guide you. And it's kind of like the greeting at Notu.
Yeah, your father does the same thing, and bows and says the same thing, and then pulls you into a back-breaking hug. Anyone with a passive perception over 16,
hell yeah,
would notice that his father almost squints and that he has a very hard time using his right arm.
Pants didn't notice that.
Grayson definitely knows that. Grayson sees the face of God.
Temple 2.
Grayson looks up at the sky and sees the outline of Justine's face looking down at them.
That tickled me so much.
It was like, yes.
He gives him an equally, if not slightly stronger hug back.
It is good to have you home.
Oh, you have no idea how much I've wanted to be back here. As much as I love my friends behind me, it is so good to feel the warmth of the sun's on me here.
Yes, who are your guests?
Grayson Kato, as you know, House of Kato. I'm sure you're familiar with his father.
Zornar nods his head to you, Grayson, respectfully.
Hail and well met, sir. And he says it in Draconic.
Ooh.
Oh, wow, fancy.
Yeah, and he says, may Bahamut's light guide you.
And you.
Then here we also have Valen.
Valen, like, raises, like, waves and kind of extends a hand to shake his hand.
He shakes it.
And I feel like he doesn't speak Draconic, and I feel like he's been asking, like, to, like, oh, I want to be able to be respectful and say something nice to your father in Draconic. That Grayson and Torash taught him something, like, wrong. Like,
yeah.
Like, oh, like the sun smiles on your bare ass or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, hell yeah.
And I say that to him, and he just kind of, like, looks at me, he's like, what? Like,
no, he looks at you and then looks at his son and hits him on the hand.
I look at Grayson and Torash for approval. I'm like, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Just trying not to laugh. Yeah.
Amazing.
I'm just like, yeah, man.
Yeah. So Torash is doing the same thing. And he just kind of gives a little subtle, like, thumbs up. When we also have Temple, also known as MT1, I'm sure. And you also know him.
Yes.
Temple waves again. Backstory. Temple got these notes that I wrote about the planets. He wanted to come and help. There was like a village that's like collapsed into the ocean side that they worked to donate money to. So he walks up to Zornar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he walks up to Zornar and says, "Hello, it's good to see you. Do you have news of Yindrog Village?"
He looks a little surprised and happy. "No casualties."
"Excellent. That's great to hear."
"Repairs are in the works."
"Lovely."
And he looks at Torash impressively.
Pants puts the hat of disguise on and turns into,
Oh, Jesus.
Holy shit. Anthony, what's your character's name again?
Grayson?
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 He puts his hat of disguise on and turns into Tiny Grayson, and in Draconic goes, hail and well met.
Hail and well met indeed.
And then he takes the hat back off.
Quite the trick. Quite the trick.
Well, little rambunctious is a little bit of an understatement, if you would agree.
Mm. And then your last friend here?
Certainly, last but not least, we have six.
You roll your own cigarettes.
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
How does he know that?
She's smoking.
Well, how did he know he rolled? She rolled
tell.
Her.
You can tell.
Yeah, you can tell when someone rolls their own cigarette.
Oh, okay.
You can see the craftsmanship a mile away.
He pulls a little like thing out from his robe, and there's hand rolled cigarettes of his, and he says, "Don't tell my wife."
What the fuck?
He's a cool dad.
He's not like a regular dad. He's a cool dad.
And he hands one to you and says, "This is the best tobacco on Notuv."
Oh.
How long have we kept that a secret, Dad? Probably 18 years, if I had to guess.
Seeing as you're 19 years old, that makes sense.
I bring out the worst in people, Torash.
Above the table. Did we know Torash was 19?
Torash is 19.
Torash is dope.
A little baby.
Yeah.
With that toy booty hole.
Please, if you'd all join, you're all guests of our home. And he starts to walk towards this little settlement area.
And I'm just walking right next to him with my arm kind of like around his shoulder.
As we're walking, I lean over to Valen and I go, "Why did you tell Torash's dad that he has a butt of a sunshine god?"
"What is that? That guy? No, that's not what they said. Torash and Grayson told me that it was like a fun greeting for a nice greeting for him."
"Oh,
is that what that is?"
"Yeah."
"Oh, god damn it! All right, I'm gonna get those guys back.
I'm gonna get those guys."
I thought that was odd too.
I can help you. Don't worry. I'll help you. I got you.
Guess who's falling asleep with their hand in warm water tonight?
Bras in the freezer.
And the prank wars begin.
Torash, it's so good to see you. And I'm glad to see you found a team that you seem comfortable with, but there's much I must tell you in very, very little time. As much as I would have wanted you to spend time with me and your mother and all of your siblings, they've changed things in the race." And he seems to get more grave and serious. His kind of brow is really furrowing as the gold scales kind of click together. And you realize he's not leading you to your home, but to this huge erected aluminum giant dome that you kind of see on the edge of your vision, kind of coming closer and closer as you walk, which you can assume would be the Colosseum for the Vaultum Nautical, which should be in 2 days. But as he kind of steers your group that way, he says, "There are 8 groups participating in the Vaultum Nautical this year. Much fewer than ever before. I have very little information I've been able to get because they're not publicizing and advertising like they normally do. Yes, there's been things in the system the past few weeks here and there, but it's seems to be completely shut down. There will not be live audience pods or any of the normal televisedness. On top of that, there's been many people, individuals, and groups that have pulled out. And it seems like they're forcing people to be in groups this year. There are no individuals left to run, which has always been a classic and normal thing of the Vaultum Nautical.
also. And he kind of glances back at all of you. The council has become involved through my contacts.
When you hear him say that, you just see kind of Torash like tighten up and just like a kind of like a snarl kind of comes on his face a little bit.
They've changed the prizes as well. The date and the prizes changed for the biggest event every 15 years in the star system. I don't know why, but I think they're trying to attract something or someone to this race, and it deeply concerns me. As for the groups, I know one of the entrances is from a very famous Griff. I don't know much about her, but her family line contains some of the most intense mercenaries that I've ever heard of. There's also rumors that there's a contestant from V7, which has never happened in history. Also, a group of pirates called the Smiley Pirate Gang.
Oh.
Ah, joy.
Ah, fuck!
God. Small system.
Very small system.
You know who that is?
Ah, fuck those guys. We hate those guys.
Six.
It's all a blur.
I see. Well, there's also a group of ranged assassins that have never been heard of that specialize in taking down targets from afar, usually from cliff sides. They use aerial advanced space rifles, snipers, would you say, and they're led by a bloodthirsty cyborg.
Oh, he's a cyborg.
Beware the cyborg!
Interesting. Very interesting.
Not a cyborg.
Does he have a cybertronic eyeball by chance?
He does.
Does he have a cybertronic pinky toe by chance?
Ooh, just the pinky toe.
I don't think I've seen his feet, but that's a, why would you
what
ask
about,
that?
What about, okay, thanks. That'll do. It's very important. I'm working on something. I need a cybertronic pinky toe. That's all I need.
We'll have to hop on Feet Finder to see if he has that pinky toe.
He looks at you, Torash, and eyebrows go up, and he just kind of nods like, all right, good group.
Can you just imagine, just picture it with me for a second, and like, towards the end of the campaign, this fucking just Frankenstein homunculus of all these pieces and parts that Pants has collected just comes hobbling out of the ship.
Flexing
closet
its giant pinky toe.
And just looks at all of us like, please, kill me.
Brother, Edward.
Please end my life.
It has been 0 days since the last Nina meme.
Oh my god.
There may or may be not a secret closet that he's built on the ship. With human body parts.
Now to the race itself, the layout has changed a bit. Torash, I know you've been studying, but does your team know about the volcano and how to get there and what the race will look like?
So we are racing up the side of a volcano?
In a way, MT1. The race will basically be a who gets there first to the volcano, which you will eventually have to scale. It's a huge circular perimeter, where each team will be placed equal measure apart on the outside of the perimeter. Then you will work your way forward, going through obstacles, lava tubes, pools of heated magma. Of course, there will be tests, creatures, magic, technology, all placed between you and your goal. And the first team to survive and get to the center of the volcano wins the Vaultsman Nautical. It might sound on the simpler side, but this is not simply an athletic feat. It will test your brain, brawn, and magic.
I thought this was a race around the planet's circumference.
It normally is, but as you know, or you might know, Notuv is a planet at war with itself. On our southern hemisphere are giant glaciers that turn into vast oceans. The northern burns extremely hot, and volcanoes, magma, trappings of that nature cover the entire top half. And in the centers are one continent, which wraps like a ring around the entire planet. It hasn't been released as much as I would like, but there is a huge, suspicious situation where part of the landmass has collapsed. So now this is the new map of the Vaultsome Nautical. The part that collapsed was the part that you had alluded to, MT1.
Right.
But luckily, there were no casualties. I don't have any proof, but something tells me that the Council is behind this and are going to be watching very closely.
I believe that, and part of our mission, we've kind of figured that much.
Interesting. I know Bahamut's Light will guide you all.
Aww.
And he kind of puts his forehead to yours, Torash, and rubs, like, the side of your chin.
Aww.
I give him the old fucking, like, forearm clasp.
That was a fucking good slap. That's keep slap. That in.
Yeah, that kind of hurt. I did that too bad.
Make and, sure that gets in there.
So you walk. You're catching up. Torash probably asking about your family. The rest of you checking your gear and weapons. And you finally get to this large aluminum dome. People kind of bustle around. You see lines and entrances. But because, Torash, of who your father is and the weight he has of participating in the nautical previously, he's able to kind of walk you through a back area and kind of sneak you all in. So you don't have to go through like the standard waits to get in and check in and deal with press and things like that. And as you kind of go in, you're sent to a holding area. Torash, you and your father exchange, you know, kind of a silent goodbye as he looks in your eyes with swelling pride and says, "I'll see you on the other side." And then he leaps. And you're kind of in this dark waiting room with very dim lights as you wait kind of for the next step. Vaultsome Nautical just a few hours away. And what would you like to do while you wait?
Pants clicks Fidget's projector on and on a bare wall. And he goes, "Hey, guys, guess what?"
Doki doki.
And then you start hearing Doki Doki's theme song playing.
Doki 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 doki.
the tonal whiplash of that.
I know, right? So yeah, you watch Doki Doki for quite a bit. You want to have any talking or room to roleplay before we get straight into the nautical? Feel free.
You just hear Pants like say, "So, hey, what's all this nonsense about a volcano? I thought this was just like a literal race. We're not just doing that anymore.
Are we not flying ships?"
Yeah, I thought
we were never flying ships. We went over this. Like it's always been a foot race.
I think you both have a very fundamental misunderstanding of what this race always was.
Well, you're telling me the last time I heard we were like gonna just race down a track or something. That was it. I was just gonna sit there.
That was never the plan.
Now I have to do stuff?
We always were gonna have to do stuff.
To accept some idea of truth without experiencing it is like a painting of a cake on paper which you cannot eat.
What? You have cake?
No, I don't.
That's such a Pants response. I love it.
I am experiencing no joy or pleasure in the thought of killing, which is something I've never experienced before.
If it makes you feel any better, Six, I also am not experiencing any joy or pleasure in the thought of doing that, mainly just because, like...
I'm tired. We've got to race the spaceship.
This whole ordeal, it's not... It's a foot race. It's a foot...
At that, a big blinding light of a door kind of slides open. A big, tall Leonin kind of stands there and looks at you all and says... "You're all due to get your pre-race physical. I'll lead you to it." And you head to a room, like a little waiting room. And there is an elf standing there in kind of a lab coat. Competitors for the race?
Yes, this is a Harper's Harpoon.
Go ahead and get your physical started.
Turn your head and cough.
Who's first?
You guys can go first. I'll go last.
Valen will walk in first.
So each of you go in one at a time, and this doctor is very respectful and gives you a physical just to make sure you are in shape. She makes you do little tricks of magic and just kind of goes through the motions. And then you all are in the room, and she comes out with a little test tray, like a little tray, and says, okay, it's time for your tracking injections.
She's going to try and inject us with a microchip.
Insight check.
Insight check.
Bullet. I want to do that as well, too.
Yeah, I feel really weird about this.
21 insight.
Oh, you fucker. That was almost a natural 20. Taurus rolled an 8.
Insight. 15 plus 3. 18 for Valen.
Anyone over an 18 knows that this is a tracking serum. It is set usually, the way that these work is set with a time period. So you will be able to be tracked, but then it will disintegrate inside your system. Grayson, because you got the highest roll, you can tell that these are very fine quality made, like military level. Right arms, please.
Is this a requirement?
Yes. We have to know where you are in the race to see who wins and what time. And
how about you just put a tracker on our external tracker?
Those can be manipulated.
Yeah, I think we prefer external trackers.
It was all in the contract.
I don't remember signing a contract.
Chikalda did it for you guys.
That's right, I remember that.
Didn't raise a red flag for her?
Well, motherfucker.
Pants says, I have extreme allergies to needles.
I'm sorry.
So I can't have that.
I have a potion that'll counteract any allergy reactions.
Ooh, can I just have that?
Once you take this, yes.
Oh. Wow, she drives a hard bargain.
Taurus will step forward and give her his arm.
How long will this last for?
24 hours.
Can I have that in a guarantee?
Amazing.
Insight check.
Insight it.
See if she's lying.
You hear as she hypo sprays into your arm, Taurus.
26.
She, to her knowledge, yes, these last 24 hours. She's telling you the truth.
That's what she knows, yeah.
That's fine. I'll step up next then.
You get a hypo spray.
How's that going to work for me?
I will just insert into one of your wires. We actually had one made since we knew there was a Warforge.
Convenient. He extends his arm.
So convenient.
Step on up.
Yeah, I still don't like it. I still don't like it. I still would. Yep. I
also still don't like it.
I don't like it either, but at this point, like, it fits the only way we
Pants
can
go. Doesn't want it.
Here's my other thing, Doc. You know, looks, yeah, you already put it into my boy Temple over there. Why do you need to put it in me?
I'm just doing what I'm instructed to do.
All right.
But why?
Who's instructing you to do it?
This is just the rules of the race.
Some shit.
That's some shit.
You know who else was doing what they're instructed to do?
The Nazis.
The Nazis.
Oh my god.
The doctor's like, what's that?
I don't know what that is. I have other patients to attend to.
Okay, you could go attend to them.
Yeah, go attend to them. We'll make our way to our... We'll make our way.
Thanks for the option, but we're just going to go.
You can't race without this.
We can. And we will.
You can't.
We can and we will.
Yeah, tell him. Tell him, Six.
Can Six just put her in a sleeper hold?
Yeah.
What?
Yes. Yes. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it.
Shh, 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 shh. Only dreams. Only dreams.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I mean, you can. Roll.
And Taurus try and intervene and stop her from doing that?
Roll strength, and Taurus roll dexterity.
Fuck. Can I roll strength instead?
Yeah, it's not gonna happen.
Taurus rolled a 9.
Oh, no.
Sleeper hold, sleeper hold, sleeper hold.
This is such a bad idea.
I'm about this.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
This is a terrible idea.
Six rolled a 3.
No!
Oh, there it is.
Okay, so Six, you go to do it, and then Taurus just grabs your wrist and gives you like a look and stops you. And then the doctor takes a step back and is like, I don't get paid enough for this.
Well,
and then walks away.
Then it sounds like we're gonna make our way.
Grayson is gonna cast friends.
Fuck.
There we go.
Grayson cast friends. and is going to say and try to persuade them, you've already injected this into most of our crew. There's no point in having all of us, needing all of us to have this in us. We are working as a unit. You're already tracking us.
Roll persuasion with advantage.
Staying alive. Staying alive.
With advantage, 20.
Woo! Better than a 3.
She looks at 6 as she has 6 had kind of gone for her and then looks at you and goes, when they ask you, I gave this to you. And then she walks out of the room.
Perfect.
That was deeply unpleasant.
5 minutes later, you just hear in the back of the fucking place, it's just like, fuck, he tricked me!
Yeah, motherfucker! Yeah.
Thank you, Grayson. Thank you.
Okay, so... Well, I didn't expect that.
Well, it would be a Dungeons & Dragons episode if it wasn't some fucking debauchery.
So the Leon comes back and kind of nods to you all and just with a tilt of his head gestures for you to follow. You follow through and realize that you are kind of underground of this big like Colosseum aluminum structure that you had seen where the other teams are all being set up. It doesn't really make sense why you would be separated, but you kind of just trust the process and start going with it. You walk deeper and deeper underground until you hit a very large circular room. It's dark, but there is a round tube in the middle. This cylinder-like glass tube opens and it kind of parts so that there's a door for you all to walk inside. It comes back to you, the images of the Vaultum Nautical throughout time. That this is it. You have reached the starting line. And for everyone listening, if you've ever seen the Hunger Games, when Katniss kind of goes into that tube and then is lifted upwards onto the map, that's very much this style of what's happening. And you all kind of look at each other, and then at this tube, and the Leonin says, best of luck, and closes the door. And you're all underground in this cool...
We're all together, right?
You are.
Okay.
You're all underground in this cool air-filtrated area.
You see Torash kind of start, like, hyping himself up, you know, kind of, like, bouncing in place a little bit, you know, like, warming his shoulders up. You know, just as they say, 30 seconds to start, he just kind of, like, slams his foot on the ground, lets out this really loud, like, intimidating roar, and he kind of does draconic kind of dance. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the haka that the All Blacks do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he kind of does, like, a draconic haka, you know, where he's just, like, yelling out and, like, doing all these, like, crazy arm movements and, you know, like, making all these faces in draconic, you know, pretty much just, like, hyping himself up for the, you know, for the event.
What are the All Blacks?
They're New Zealand's rugby team.
Oh, okay, got it.
Pants is like, were we supposed to know how to do that?
So Valen, your team stands around you with bated breaths, breathing heavily. Torash almost seems to shine as he is finally doing the Vaultum Nautical, the thing he was born to do. And slowly you hear the mechanisms of mechanical sci-fi gears starting to turn and you feel a lurch that makes your stomach drop even further than it already is. As you raise up, it gets even darker in this underground space. You feel the darkness pressing in on you almost through the glass. And as you raise up above, you expect to see the planet you're on. No Tuve. Feel the heat of the volcanoes and the light spray of the ocean. But as you open your eyes, darkness, a void, pure black, and you are alone.
I think as the elevator goes up, right, and it's the changing of the scenery, Valen stops for a second and closes his eyes, right? His eyes are closed. He's preparing for it, right? And he takes a deep breath and just says it out loud. He goes, well, Torash, I hope you're fucking ready for this. Let's go.
The silence that answers you is deafening as you open your eyes to a black void. There's nothing around you.
He looks around and just kind of like scans the area, kind of looking for, I guess, anything familiar. Is the ground different? Is...
Think of... The best way I can describe it is think of the Matrix. When they went into those blank white spaces and they would say guns, and guns kind of disappeared, except this is pure black. It feels emptier than even than it looks.
Okay.
You, again, notice that there's no one around you.
Hey, guys. Where'd y'all go? Hello?
Hello? Your voice echoes and then gets almost swallowed by the dark.
Okay. I'm going to start looking around.
Roll perception for me.
That's a 3 plus 3, so it's a 6.
There's nothing here.
I think what Valen's going to do is just going to use one of his cantrips to kind of try to light the area, almost like a flare.
Okay.
Like send a flare up. So I'm just going to cast a firebolt.
Okay.
And it's just going to be a fireball that just shoots out of his hand. He raises his left hand and just goes...
Okay.
And then just
straight up?
Just straight up, yeah. Just to see what... To kind of illuminate the area.
Yeah, so as you shoot your hand up, what color is this?
So it's still radiating green, the stone. And as it shoots out, and you know how fire is, like, at different temperatures, it's, like, blue than red?
Mm-hmm.
I think as it shoots out, it starts to come out green. And then as it almost, like, oxidizes, it turns into, like, black and red. And it's, like, a fireball, but it's, like, surrounded by this magical lightning that, like, represents, like, the bond between Tereth and Lilith and I.
Yeah, so you rift your hand, this void, and this firebolt comes up, and about 35 feet away from you, you see a glint of purple eyes, and then they're gone as the fireball starts to fade.
I am going to shoot a firebolt in that direction.
Okay. You see a dark figure, those purplish eyes, again, bright, that just... sidesteps immediately, and yeah, you have no idea who this dark, ominous figure is as the fire again, the light dies out. But as your hand kind of the force of magic pushed out of your hand, you kind of took a half step back and your foot hit something, and you kind of are unstable as you see this figure sidestep perfectly, and these purple eyes flash again, and then the darkness returns, and you kind of regain your footing to whatever was behind you.
I'm going to turn around and forget what I stepped on. It's soft. It's like soft, right? It's not like a rock.
It's softer, yes.
Okay.
And as the residual green still kind of flares in the stone in your hand, you look down and there see a body.
I'm going to kneel down and investigate it, look at it.
So you kneel down slowly, the darkness pressing in even more. Your hand, your arms, grazes against fur that you felt many times. And as you shine that ever-dimming green light from that stone, you see pale amber eyes, faded, graying, looking past you in the face of Six, blood trickling down her muzzle, braids coated and matted with thick blood, and a huge black dagger of darkness that was her own punctured in her chest.
I pick her up.
Six, wake up.
And I kind of like just start shaking her. I'm like, Six, what happened?
The panic in your heart is starting to grow. I need you to roll me a medicine check.
16.
Six is dead.
He like takes a breath and he's just holding her.
As she presses against your flesh, the body so cold and starting to go stiff, and you kind of bow your head, your horns almost about to touch her ears as you're cradling your friend. The weight is gone and smoke and ash, feeling like a soft mist fall through your hands and fingers, and as you hear the clatter as the dagger falls to the ground.
Valen's gonna pick up the dagger.
The minute you do, it starts to glow, which makes no sense. Your confusion level was already so high, but now the
the confusion and panic are starting to intertwine, because this is a dagger of darkness and it's glowing as if it's a torch of light in your hand. And 15 feet away from you, the opposite direction of where that shadowy figure was, you see a smaller body.
He gets up and runs over.
You run and start to slip. I need a dexterity saving throw.
Dexterity saving, that is 18.
Okay, you start to slip and slide perfectly. Your wings flare out, catching whatever air is in this voided space, and you're able to stabilize yourself. You look down as you almost slide and see that familiar sparkly blue vomit that is leading to this body, and you feel the heat hitting your boots like it's fresh.
Little buddy?
You walk the last 3 feet, and Pants' eyes are rolling in the back of his head as he's coughing up more of this blue vomit, and you can tell he's asphyxiating on his own vomit.
Valen runs over and immediately casts Cure Wounds.
You put your hands over his small body as he's... You see a broken fidget, head torn off, cradled in his hands, and as he's choking, you do it, and he's able to breathe for a second. He looks at you, eyes wide, and that toothy, fanged grin pops up, and he reaches out a scaled hand as he one hand holds fidget's torn off head, and he reaches for you.
I grab his hand, and I pull him in close.
You grab his hand, and as you do and pull him in, he had breathed in, and he exhales as he's finally in your arms, safe. You hold him.
Little buddy. Pants. What happened? Pants.
And as that last breath exhales, not another one is drawn. He's still warm, but the dead weight falls against you.
I think at this point, it's not like a spell or anything, but I think there's like an eruption of magic that comes out of him, like in pure rage.
Okay, tell me what that looks like.
It starts off like little crackling lightning, and then it's just like explodes out fire and light, and every element just enraged.
This bang of green, black, silver, and red shoot out and kind of sits, and as the darkness starts to eat it almost, you have a faint light, and to the left of Pants, crawling on his stomach, frozen almost in time, is Grayson, with Azeron clutched to his back, and Grayson is dead. You look to your right and see a strewn torso, wires sticking out from the bottom, arms mingled in ways that shouldn't make sense, as Temple's eyes are gray instead of orange. You look up and you see, lastly, right in front of the two, as if they were trying to crawl towards him, Torash on his knees. And as you look, Torash makes eye contact with you. He looks up to this black void to see your magic, takes his light sword. You see the tears streaming down his face. And though his mouth opens, you hear this echoed whisper all around you. It said, "Bahamut, how could you take her from me?" And he plunges his own light sword into his heart and falls slowly forward. You hear no crash as he hits the ground.
Valen falls to his knees.
All around you was the only family you ever had. Dead.
As he sees that, he's holding Pants, and he reaches out to Torash right before he plunges it to kind of try to stop him. But like, and he goes to scream like no, but nothing comes out. Torash and falls to the ground. And then he falls to his knees, and just the weight of everything that around him, he's in shock. He doesn't know if this was him, because he's had blackouts in the past. So I think he turns to his stone and just whispers, into the stone. He goes, Lilith, what have you done?
She can't hear you, Valen.
Tara?
You feel a presence approaching you from behind. And it goes to about 5 feet behind you. And you know it's Tareth.
So I think at this point, still not knowing what's happening, knowing that these demons can possess, he still has the dagger in his hand, and he's going to just turn and lunge.
Almost as in slow motion, as your wings push this darkness and all the rage comes out of you. Time freezes. You're frozen. You can feel the weight of the air perfectly balancing your wings as you got momentum. And Tareth looks up at that dagger almost perfectly to him. And he looks at you and says,
"This is not my doing, Tiefling."
And with that, you actually fall to the ground. So it's like the weirdest space-time bending you don't understand, because you were about to impale him and then you just drop to the ground, and he's standing over you, hands casually in his pockets in a really casual stance. He looks down at you and his face is almost a mix of pity and interest, and he just kind of stares at you and says,
"You know, I've never really been sorry for many things in my life. It's not my nature. But this is indeed a tragedy."
And he kind of looks around at all these bodies. You realize that Six is back behind him about 10 feet where you thought that she had vanished. Same stance. It's the dagger still in her chest, but it's almost a shadow because the real one's in your hand. And he looks around and then looks back at you, making eye contact.
Valen lowers his head, hands on the ground. You just see his wings just drop, and like almost his body just releases. And you just hear him sobbing, just quietly, through trying to control. And then it kind of gets into like this whole like panic. Where? It wasn't you. Where were you then? Why? How could you let it happen?
Oh, Valen, your emotions are refreshing. This isn't real. I'm showing you things, though, that will come to pass if we do not make changes.
What? He wipes his face, kind of looks at his hands, and I assume that there's just still blood all over them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not real. I can still feel their blood. It's still warm.
Tareth kind of just watches you as you're processing and starts to casually almost walk in a circle around all of these bodies as you're sitting there and kind of regaining your strength. He's not saying anything, but you can tell as you glance at him, you can sense he's unsure, which this is the most arrogant, confident of creatures, demons that you've ever met. But you glean that off of him, which is surprising to you. And I need you to roll insight.
That's a 14 plus 3.
You can tell with that insight roll that he did not do this.
Valen's gonna raise, like, stand up again. With that, you notice his wings kind of perk up a little bit, and then they fold into his shoulders like they're meant to, like when he's not using them. He's still clutching the dagger, and he turns to make eye contact with Tareth.
Tareth almost just feels your eye contact. You see his body become more stiff. He slightly turns towards you and kind of waves a hand and some of the bodies just become ash again. And this space feels more solid. Now it's less echoey and billowy, as if it's only you two in a very small space. Your presence becoming so big.
He stands up, takes a deep breath. Turns to Tarith, makes eye contact. Answer me this. Who killed them?
Ah, so you seek revenge. Interesting choice.
Revenge is one way to put it. But I don't think there's words for what I'm about to do.
Luckily for you, this hasn't happened yet.
There may be ways
that have not happened at all.
You ask who has done this?
You already know, Valen.
He waves his hand again, and almost an image flashes for a few seconds of what you would know to be the Council.
Well, oh, insightful one. How do we stop this from happening?
The Vault's Nautical is not what you think. The Council knows you're going. Why do you think the rules have suddenly changed? Why do you think you're all allowed to compete together? Come on, Valen, it's not that hard to put together.
Well, I mean, I know the Council's behind it, but I need to know who exactly and what we need to do to stop this from happening.
They use a necromancer from Torash's past, waiting at the base of the volcano, to slice into your friends one eye. What? I just gave you a flash of their intentions and used a good chunk of my magic, as infinite as it may seem, to tap in. Because as you know, I've always been very invested in you all.
Why the fuck is that? We stumble upon you at fucking Terra 19, and now you're fucking following us like a goddamn lost puppy, showing me shit. What the fuck do you have to do with any of this?
He turns towards you, his presence giant. As he walks calmly towards you, never breaking eye contact, he picks an invisible piece of lint off the coat that he wears. He gets a foot from you. You notice that you stand almost the same height, and he glares at you and says,
"Well, it seems we're finally asking the right questions. Let me ask some back to you. Why are you helping me, you say? You should have thought of that from the minute you met me. From the minute those situations of coincidence seem to start happening. Did you ever wonder why your break curse didn't work from Grace and Kato? That had been worked so many times before, Valen. Did you ever wonder why I cared enough to help you at all? Not once, but countless times. Did you ever wonder why your group was able to free me from Terra 19?
And at this point, he is almost in your face. You can smell his rich scent of sulfur and an ocean breeze kind of pouring over you. And another scent that's so familiar that you've never really been able to grasp before, as he's leaning in and he just stares into your soul and says,
I was trapped on that fucked planet for over 1,000 years. You know how many wanderers came? How many lost travelers and stray quests to bring Terra 19 back to the way it was? Do you know how many deals I made over those hundreds of individuals? Why your group? Why was I freed?
First off, as he starts approaching, Bella does stand up more upright as he gets closer. As he gets closer, my wings unclasp and get bigger around me.
Almost as a reflection, as your wings start to rise, his hair almost becomes like more flame-like and starts to flutter and rise, his shoulders getting bigger as he stands up to his full height, his beauty shining through.
Yeah, folks, this is a big dick measuring contest right now. Valen just looks at him. I think he's kind of taken aback because he's trying to figure out, like, why the fuck? These are all questions that he never had a chance to ask, because from the moment we landed on Terret 19 and left, there's been so much going on in this, like, week span.
Yeah.
He hasn't had a chance to actually sit down and think about it, you know, and ask why. I mean, he's also been so concerned with trying to amass power to break the deal with Lilith, that this little bit of power he got from Tarith, he just kind of saw it as like a, okay, cool, well, now I have someone else backing me. That's all the stuff that's kind of going through his head right now.
And he just stares at him.
He's not breaking eye contact.
Things are coming together, aren't they? Come on, boy. Why would I give a fuck about all of you?
And I need you to roll me a history check.
That's a 22.
That smell? That's the smell of your mother.
I think at that realization, his wings slacken again and his shoulders slump. And there's this confused look on his face.
We're figuring it out, aren't we?
He, like, leans in a little closer, and he takes a whiff. He goes,
it's 100% your mother, but it's intertwined with Tarith. And as you realize this, your eyes go wide. You don't know how much more you can take. And he closes his eyes gently and also inhales. And as he opens those purple eyes, you realize you're staring at your own eyes.
Valen's just, there's confusion. There's just, he's like going through his memories, trying to figure out like what the fuck, like why is he's trying to figure out why he smells of her. Then he starts thinking about growing up and how his mother never talked about anything outside of their little hut. It was just them two. She focused on the present. Anytime she asked about anything to do with family, she just kind of laughed it off, then brushed it off. I'm like, oh, no, ha, ha, ha. It's just constant flashbacks. And as he's going through his memories and trying to figure out, like, what, like, she kept everything a secret, like, even their location, like, it was very, like, hush-hush. The reason they lived on the outside of town, that's the reason that they never really engaged with a lot of people. And then he starts thinking about previous conversations as he got older, about, like, where they're from originally. Because he never understood why he looked so different on Invinia. And he asked her many a times, you know, we're from here. Why are we different? Why does this not feel like home? You know, even though he grew up there, like, even seeing her, you could just tell that she was never relaxed and at ease. And then one conversation, yeah, before she died and before he was taken by Lilith, she ended up having a very direct conversation with him. And it's a memory that he doesn't remember having. It's almost like when you remember a movie or like you remember a dream and it's like that didn't happen, and it's but it feels familiar and it feels real. And it's a conversation he had with her. She was in a panic, didn't know what was going on. He didn't understand, like, why she was divulging all this information, but she basically told him everything, that she's not originally from there, that his dad was somebody that is no longer around, and there's no way, there was never a way to get back in contact with him, that she was traveling the stars, she was exploring before all this. So then she ended up being stranded on Divinia, pregnant and alone, had to rebuild the life, and that's why that they were there. As that memory fades, something that someone didn't want him to know. And at that moment, he finds himself standing in front of Tareth. Just anger. Now, the confusion is still there, but it's starting to get overwhelmed by anger. And he looks at him, fist clenched, and shoves him away.
I'm not even going to have you roll for this, because I think Tareth was so in tune watching you process this that he looks shocked and takes two steps back.
All right. Just fucking say it.
Say what, Fallon? What you already know? Why Lilith would be interested in a nobody with no power? A tiefling with no family, no friends, when she had connections of power to everyone. Lilith didn't banish me to that planet for a lover's quarrel. Lilith banished me because she saw a glimpse of the future. She saw she was no longer going to be the object of my affections. She saw my child, my son, and she couldn't have that. And so she pushed me through realms of space and time, and I rotted and waited for my revenge. I became something, but something I never wanted. And then your mother came to Terra 19. You already know who I am, Fallon. I don't have to say anything. The question is, who are you?
Fallon's just taking deep breaths. His heart's racing. He's trying to control his breathing. He feels another panic attack coming up. He's trying to, like, control his emotions.
Tareth raises his hand, kind of turns it in a 360 motion, and then snaps his fingers. And all of a sudden you feel the familiar breeze of Invenia. You open your eyes and see your beautiful two-story hut. You look and see 200 feet from your hut, the old ruined temple you used to play in as a boy. The first place your mother and you climbed to the top of when you were 6 years old and she taught you how to fly. You see all of it, but these memories that were yours start to warp and fade and change. And there's a figure now who walks out of that hut, a damper on his power as Tareth looks at this memory of your mother that he's inserted himself into. And you see a peace on his face that you didn't even know was possible. This evil, twisted devil looks almost human, almost that of a fire genasi, which was once his true form. And at the woman he had loved deeper than anything he had thought was possible, the one who had convinced him that he could be good, that he could change, that this empire he'd built with Lilith for years and years could be rejected and changed and fixed. And you see a man that has broken a mating bond of demons and sacrificed so much of his power to be with this woman and his son.
and you see what he would have been willing to give up for your mother. And then you're plunged black into darkness. You look down and still see Pants at your feet, Grayson's hand curled and close to your ankle, Torash bloodied behind you, Six behind Tarith. And Tarith looks at you with a stone-cold face and says,
"There's a reason she chose you, Lilith. And there's a reason I want her dead. Your mother's accident was no accident. And the demon devil that you know as Lilith has been raising you in hate."
And he just stares at you calmly, confidently, the stone face that reflects the stone of his heart, as he just is looking into the eyes of his son. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dungeon Boys. We know that it was a pretty heavy shift, but don't worry, we'll be back to our normal goofy self here quite soon. There's some changes coming up with The Dungeon Boys that we're excited to share with you within the next couple of episodes. There will be announcements and updates throughout the next few episodes as well, so we ask that you always stay till the end of the show, whether it's a blooper, an update, or even promotion of other amazing folks in the TTRPG community. We ask that you just hang tight with us. You can always check us out on all the good things. And as most of you probably know by now, we have reopened our Patreon. So please, if you want to support this amazing work that we do, check us out at www.patreon.com/thedungeonboys for all kinds of fun things like seeing the maps, some extra videos, some silly bloopers, and just getting to know the boys even more. Also, you can find us on any social media at The Dungeon Boys, spelled B-O-I-Z. That includes Twitter. Yes, it's Twitter, and will forever be Twitter, even though it's X. Instagram, where we're the most active. Our community Discord, where you can hang out with like-minded nerds talking about films, movies, questions of the day, imagination stations, and, of course, Dungeons, Dragons, and all the TTRPGs. The world is kind of a scary place right now, and we want you to know that our group and our community is a safe place for you. And we hope, as always, all your space travels are safe.
Better fuck some bitches up.
You gotta love that recap.
Ooh, that was a good recap, dude.
You did some shit on the ship, and now you're here! Play!
I'm great at my job.